Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. The Six Nations is over and we are here for the big inquest. And for the first time in what I think is probably 2 and a bit years, we are podding in person and it feels great. Let's get the ambiguity out of it. You guys are allowed to drink during the podcast recording as long as you're on campus, but not allowed to go to clubs whilst recording the podcast. Is that all right?
Is that guidance or is that protocol?
Well, I think we're going to get into this. For me, as a senior leadership group, I think we've got to agree the protocol ourselves, right?
Yeah, we've got to agree to it together.
I think a 2-beer maximum, no, 2-beer minimum while we're recording the podcast. What do you think about that?
And is wine not a pub, a bar, or a nightclub? What's allowed?
Back in the heyday of like Friday night, why not, like 2005, it was definitely a nightclub. I can't say I've been there for like over a decade.
There's nothing about that place that resembles a pub. If that was your local, you'd have serious issues.
God, I don't think anyone's propping up the bar. There's no like old boys at the end of the bar. Why not?
Yeah.
Anyway, we are diving straight into obviously the big talking point of certainly the last week. Was it a night out or was it not? And we will be talking about that loads. But thank you very much for joining us and throughout the Six Nations, showing us your support by listening to the pod, by following us on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod, on Instagram, Thistle_Rugby_Pod, and for contributing to a record run for the newsletter on Substack, that's Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast, and drops into your inbox every Monday morning. So get yourself onto Substack and subscribe to that. We've already joked a little bit about it. We're going to start by talking about the off-field issues. We're then going to look a little bit onto the pitch, what went wrong, and then look forward to the summer tour and beyond and ask that question, where does Scotland go from here? But Alan, if I can come to you first, let's talk about the off-field issues as we look at them and the sort of the impact that they've had. I mean, let's start with an open-ended question. How much of an issue do you think the Saturday before the Ireland game was?
You obviously don't really know. I think generally, probably in terms of preparation, not actually massive in terms of from more like a functional standpoint. But I think ultimately, when it got out, it was always going to impact that build-up.
And certainly the manner in which it got out, which was lots of leaks and whispers, then sort of confirmed the night before with a very terse statement from the SRU.
Exactly. I think on that Thursday, there was sort of whisperings started to come out and start getting shared into either WhatsApps or into our DMs. And then on that Friday, it seemed from a few, I imagine a few journalists were just looking to like, I need like the smoking gun to be able to like publish this. And it sounds like the BBC got it from the SRU in the end.
From Mark Dodson.
Yeah.
Mark Dodson was, he follows Why Not on Facebook. So he was probably looking at the photo album from the Saturday night.
He is the admin.
He's the admin for Why Not. Matt, do you agree about that? I mean, I think in terms of sort of disruption and how much, I suppose it's an unanswerable question, but how much sort of impact do you think that might have had on the sort of the eventual result versus Ireland?
I don't think it would have changed the result. I think that Saturday proved that Ireland is still streets ahead. But I do wonder if Finn was dropped for Kinghorn, for instance, like putting in Kinghorn on his international debut at 10 against, you know, one of the top three teams in the world probably is far from ideal preparation. And then I think from what we're hearing that maybe when it, the news was released that the players had been out on the Sunday to the rest of the Scotland camp, that it caused a few ruptures. And if that's the case, then it can't, it, to my mind, even if Hogg, Finn, all those guys, you know, giving grovelling apologies, that is bound to impact the preparation in some way, surely, it, to my mind.
Yeah, no, 100%. I guess it's probably a key question that's still not been sort of fully established was whether, I think the assumption was that Finn was dropped because of what happened that night. But yeah, actually, it's never been fully confirmed whether he did or not. And obviously, clearly, they are fans of Blair Kinghorn. They couldn't test him out against Italy. I guess there is still a question mark around whether that was made for a tactical reason. I don't think so. And I think...
Sorry, the Italy omission or the...
So the Ireland. So
sorry,
Ireland
the Ireland
change.
One, yeah.
It seems strange, though, to your point. Like, you could understand bringing Kinghorn in against Italy, and there's obviously other reasons for why that didn't happen. But given his level of experience of playing 10, if it was a tactical decision, that seems like a pretty terrible one.
Nothing from Saturday in the way that he played would suggest that there was some sort of tactical plan. I don't think, you know, he would bring a different performance to Finn. Certainly.
Agreed.
100%. And it seems that the SRU just sort of let it run away from them, almost. And the story, now being sort of exacerbated by the interventions from Rob Baxter, now that Hogg's gone back to Exeter and the sort of ambiguity, the story's now into its second week and question marks are still being asked, and it's allowing that sort of soar to... you know, rot a little bit more. The questions about what Tooney should have done, what Hoggy shouldn't have done, they continue, and the sort of the black cloud that we're going to talk about, you know, that sort of shadowing the whole tournament, is allowed to sort of go on. There's no line being drawn under it.
Yeah, it's a difficult one as well, because ultimately they want a situation where everything's kept in house and people don't speculate. And ultimately, that just doesn't, that's not going to happen.
Unfortunately, we live in the real world.
Yeah, exactly.
Social media exists, and... you know, Why Not? It's got a capacity of what, like 700 people?
Yeah. And people take Snapchat videos.
People take Snapchat of videos players. Of Scotland, international yes. Scotland players.
Yeah.
And Why Not?
And Scotland is a tiny place and Scottish rugby is even smaller.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, if you're not going to be transparent, then ultimately I think you've got to accept that there's always going to be a level of speculation from both kind of media and fans. And that's ultimately what's happened.
That is ultimately what has happened. I mean, I think... biggest questions, and we'll come into what, you know, where does it leave us now, but the big questions for me are around the leadership. Obviously, let's say six players are out. As we know, six players went out. Townsend has actually only really materially punished Finn and Sione Tuipulotu.
And even with Tuipulotu,
he probably wouldn't have started anyway because Sam Johnson was sort of back and quite happy. So what does that say about Townsend's authority over the group? Nothing good?
I wonder if he initially was thinking, right, I'm going to drop all of those players and then
yeah.
looked at the squad and kind of thought, well, actually, I'm under a bit of pressure at the moment. I need to try and put out my best possible team and beat Ireland.
Yeah.
100%. Especially if he'd made, let's say he'd made the decision that Kinghorn is going to start. You're then saying, not only is Kinghorn going to start,
yeah.
but he's going to have Vellacott inside him, which actually maybe isn't the worst thing in the world, Edinburgh. You're going to have...
maybe Bennett at 13, Bennett and Harris at 12.
In the centres together with Kyle Steyn at fullback. Or
Steyn, maybe Kyle Rowe in his debut.
Exactly.
And then who's... I can't even think he'd be playing fullback at that point.
So then we
You'd have to call up someone else, I think.
So then we get to a situation where are we thinking that those senior players are in a position within that squad where they feel a little bit untouchable?
I don't know. I mean, ultimately, you're sort of theorizing, right? But
oh, yeah. Ooh, it's, oh, boy. Oh, boy, am I.
If you make the assumption that Townsend would have liked to have pulled the lever of drop these six, I think what we're saying is that actually, if you're being pragmatic, you just can't, given the depth and importance of those players.
Yeah.
Mm. So
We did also hear that initially Hogg was dropped, for instance, and then sort of had a conversation and managed to convince Townsend not to to drop him, which I think once again maybe speaks to a lack of authority or, I don't know, that confidence in his decision making. Townsend's, that is.
Yeah. It potentially also goes back to the point, there clearly was some level of ambiguity around what people were and weren't able to do, especially from a COVID standpoint.
I have ambiguity around that as well, though. Because if it's, you're talking about Stuart Hogg, Ali Price, Finn Russell.
Yeah.
At least those three are members of the senior leadership group.
They've been vice captains.
They've been vice captains. Yeah, so let's assume.
Under Townsend at various times, including in this tournament.
During this tournament.
Yeah.
So you've got to think that night out protocols, unless they're being handed down by the coaches alone, which doesn't sound likely to me.
Well, you think back to when the initial Finn leaving camp back in 2020, the narrative around that was that it was the drinking rules, etc., were set by the players and the management, and I don't really see why that would have changed.
Exactly. So the precedent is that the senior leadership team are setting these rules. So I just don't understand the ambiguity line, because surely Hoggy, as captain of Scotland, knew when he was leaving the hotel whether what he was doing was right or not.
I don't think it's as black and white as that.
Okay.
I think ultimately there can be guidance, which is...
guidance set by yourself that you know...
which is you are what, you can go out, but just don't be an idiot about it. I think
I'd love it if that was the line. They're like, look, guys, we've got a new memo out. Just like, don't take the piss.
Which I think... but there has been some feedback that sounds like that generally was...
yeah.
The guidance was, look, you can go out, just don't take the piss.
Okay.
And I guess in some worlds... some people think could come to the conclusion that a quiet night in the VIP area of Why Not constitutes not taking the piss, versus I think maybe most people would see, you know, a hotel bar or something to that effect.
Yeah.
So I look, I'm sort of playing a little bit of a devil's advocate, but I think there clearly wasn't hard and fast rules. It was more some level of guidance.
Yeah.
For them to even be able to play the ambiguity card, right?
But I think within that, the fact that they have taken that ambiguity to its absolute extreme, rather than, as you say, you know, if they'd had like one too many pints in the hotel bar at the Orium, I think that's quite easily forgiven. Whereas they were clearly headed for a big night out. They weren't just having a few drinks. To my mind, it suggests that they knew exactly what they were doing. They knew that they were breaking the... they knew it wasn't on. And the fact that Townsend had to call them up and say, get back here. Like, if they just said to him, oh no, we're just having a couple, it's fine, then they would have stayed. But yeah, the fact that a few of them came back... like,
we're just in the Queen's arms having a couple of softs.
Yeah.
But so, it's when you're in the queue...
do you think
he's slightly taking the piss with that, and he knew that... I don't think that argument around, well, I didn't know the rules, it was ambiguous.
I like the idea of Hogg on the D floor, just like closing one ear with his finger, trying to like, it's like, Tooney, oh, and just trying to get some sort of reception down there. Yeah. Quite a basement dweller sort of venue.
Well, it's
got to ignore that call, surely.
Yeah.
It used to be like the vault of like the Bank of Scotland.
Exactly.
I guess maybe they were in the queue because you used to get a free picture. I guess once you're in that queue, you don't really want to give that up. So maybe that's why some of them stayed, some of them went, depending on how far forward they were.
I think the picture went a long time ago.
£5 entry, including a free picture.
It was a dream. Retrospectively, unbelievable value.
2005 to 2007, why not, was really where it was at.
Yeah.
Yeah, with like minimum pricing now and stuff. That's a different world.
Yeah, it's a tough gig.
Yeah. Absolutely. An absolutely tough gig. Well, we will, I mean, that's the off-field discussion. I think when we come on to talk about, you know, where do we go from here, I think there's going to be an awful lot of, we'll have a discussion around about leadership, both on and off the pitch. But Matt, why don't I come to you first, and I'll give you another really open-ended question, and you can sort of guide us however you want. What went wrong on the pitch? Scotland, Six Nations, 2 wins, 4th in the table, you know?
Yeah, I think that's kind of pretty scant consolation.
Yeah.
The thing about that question is it's like genuinely hard to, I think, pinpoint a few things, because at various points, almost everything that could go wrong went wrong.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, we talked about it in the newsletter and a lot of people talked about it, like the discipline and the defense have been on a downward slide and seem to sort of culminate in this tournament, which I'm just, you know, Scotland have clearly gone through this evolution, brought in Steve Tandy, who has until this year done a very good job of tightening up the ship and making Scotland hard to beat, as he says. And that just seems to have completely disappeared. And then for a while, as part of that evolution, you know, Scotland were maybe scoring fewer tries, and that could be forgiven if everything else was solid. But that seems to have completely gone as well. And I think that when Scotland had the ball for a lot of points in the tournament, it just wasn't clear exactly what they were trying to do.
And do you put that down to, I guess, personnel not performing, or is it the sort of the tactical shape, the game plan being laid out by Tooney and Tandy and co?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, I think the backline, from an attacking perspective, I think the backline directs a lot of the strategy and how you're playing and the decision making. And I think the key decision makers than that of, you know, Price, Russell and Hogg didn't have great tournaments overall. And then I think when you, and there could be varying reasons for that. Like Finn Russell, we know, can be temperamental. He maybe struggles coming back from Racing to play in that Scotland team. It's difficult. Price and Hogg might have had a bit of a Lions hangover, which I've got a bit of time for that argument. But then I think combined with the off-field stuff, that to me maybe suggests that there's something a bit more going on, and that those players are not happy with the game plan, what they're being told to do within that.
I guess, what do you think they're being told to do?
I mean, I don't really know.
Yeah,
I mean, but I don't know. It's hard,
I think that's a key issue, though. The fact
it's
is it was very unclear to understand what Scotland were sort of trying to achieve.
And if it's a kind of Townsend heads up, play as you see, which is what I think Russell is good at, then fair enough. But it just didn't really seem as if as much direction in the attack. And it maybe doesn't help that, like, you chop and change your centres a little bit, and I think bringing in Kinghorn just completely, like, defeats any purpose in that regard.
What did you think about the attack in the first half against Ireland? Because there was moments, especially in the first 20-25 minutes, where I actually thought Scotland were looking quite nice.
I think probably that bit, first half of the Wales game, and then a few moments in the England game where you kind of saw what they were trying to do, which was, I think when we keep the ball, we've got some good runners, and we've got a few players that can ask questions of defences. That just didn't really happen often enough.
And then I think both in that first half against Wales and in the first half against Ireland seemed to have a little bit of a struggle just getting being able to get phase play past sort of 4 or 5, and then also getting into the red zone and accumulating points. You know, in that Ireland game, the amount of possession and good work they did to then be was it 14 or 12 nil down after about 30 minutes felt very deflating.
Yeah. And I think that the discipline side of that doesn't help. Then when you get a bit of momentum, it just seemed to constantly be ruined by like a brain dead decision.
Yeah. Double digit penalties in every game, 61 or 62 total, I think, over the tournament, the highest there has been. And I think by a factor of sort of like two thirds more than the Six Nations 2 years ago. And at what stage does discipline become, you know, the responsibility of the players on the pitch versus, you know, how they're being coached to approach the breakdown or whatever it is in like the week by the team around them?
To be fair, I think with discipline, it's very little on the coaches.
Yeah.
In terms of national coaches, like ultimately, I can't, you know, I imagine they're pushing a lot of like the messages around, especially, you know, someone like Xander, like stop going for the ball so much, for example. And I think actually one of the things I was thinking back to was sort of the Scotland-England game last year, where there was just quite a few moments where it felt like Scotland were playing very smart. And then you look to the match this weekend against Ireland, and you look at both, and it's just sort of in my mind is sort of both Darcy and Carl Steyn giving away pens on kickoffs. And it feels like a player like Sean Maitland doesn't do that. Mm. And there's sort of like pros and cons for all the players, but they didn't feel like there was a lot of kind of smart play. There was a lot of dumb penalties being given away, whether it was Gilchrist, and I appreciate, you know, there was issues there, but giving away all the penalties against France when it was Woke, or whether it was Darcy Graham and Carl Steyn giving those pens away, which kind of sucked out some of the momentum.
Yeah.
It was just like there was a lot of pens, but there was also just a lot of dumb penalties that ultimately there's nothing Tooney or Steve Tandy can do about it, right?
Yeah. And it's a total momentum killer.
Yeah.
Do you think there within that, the fact there's been so many, I mean, these aren't like bad brain dead players. I appreciate that Fagerson gives away a lot of penalties, and maybe that's something that needs to be worked on, but it seems like systemic. And that to me, I'm not saying that that's because of the structures defensively that Tandy has put in place, but more that there's something going on behind the scenes in terms of that relationship between players and management, where, I don't know, there's a breakdown in communications, or there's like a lack of discipline, trust.
So I suppose once it's on the pitch, that responsibility passes from coach to captain, right? And, you know, we've talked an awful lot, and we will talk more about Hogg's captaincy. You know, we were giving away a lot at the breakdown. What impact can, and this is, again, possibly an unanswerable question for three blokes sitting in a room recording a podcast, but what impact can Hogg have from sort of 30 metres away from the ruck?
Well, as St Andrews' best breakdown player of a generation, I've got pretty good CV to answer this. But no,
And captain as well.
And captain.
So you're both responsible for giving away the penalties and then trying to plead your case to the referee.
Yeah, no, it was interesting balance of best breakdown player, but also worst captain of a generation. So, I do get that. But at the same time, like, there's got to be, like, forward leaders. And, like, ultimately, I do kind of get the argument that Hogg struggles to influence from captain, but I ultimately don't think it's different if it's DuPont or Bigger. I think when it comes to sort of those penalties around the ruck, like ultimately that's forwards kind of taking responsibility, in whoever kind of your pack leaders or leadership within the pack, whether it's a Gilchrist, a Johnny Gray, a McAnally, Fraser Brown, Hamish Watson, they're the ones that have got to be leading that, whether your captain's a fullback, a scrum half, or a standoff. And sometimes, again, just doesn't feel like our forwards have that sort of either kind of tactical that smarts a little bit. I feel like we maybe got outthought, whether it was against Wales or even against France in certain moments.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it kind of maybe points to that like leadership argument that like we've got some good players in that pack, but do we have the kind of like savvy, street smart guys? And I don't know if we do. And I don't know if we have any guys in that pack who are like particularly vocal, with maybe the exception of someone like Jamie Ritchie, who I think is someone who could have a good relationship with the referee.
Yeah.
I don't know if like Hamish Watson, one of our most senior players, pretty quiet. Like,
I think both
Gilchrist, vice captain, but, you know, didn't really see him. And I think he had a pretty good tournament, actually, to be fair, but he's maybe not one of those guys that's like leading that dialogue.
Yeah. It's just, I actually don't think the forwards had a terrible Six Nations, but there's almost just that delta between having a good and a great Six Nations. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a little bit of that leadership, a little bit around kind of what that voice is. And then there's also just, they're just not savage and like combative enough. And
we
there's
don't have any like freaks.
We don't.
Like, we've got a lot of like good size athletes now, but we do not have freaks like the French pack have got.
I think we're,
or the depth of the England pack or the Irish pack.
We're rarely going to win games solely through our pack.
Yeah.
Like our pack could play 10 out of 10
against tier one nations,
but we'd need our world-class backs to deliver those big moments. So I actually think, even though, as you said, I agree actually that forwards generally were pretty good. It actually isn't enough in that Scotland team to lead to wins.
100%.
Which is a shame, because those guys are all, like, I'd say, all, like, knocking their pan in and, like, performing to the best of their abilities.
Yeah, but I'd even say, when you think about that sort of mid-second half against Ireland, when there was just, they were getting kind of the one-off runners.
Yeah.
And there was just, even though they had a great, I felt that the forwards had a pretty good game, there was just an inevitability, and just, it was just slightly too easy to get over the gain line and have that level of quick ball, which makes it essentially impossible sometimes to stop.
And you talked about that sort of, we've talked an awful lot about this sort of the back line, the once in a generation players at the start of the tournament. Man, we were so positive. That was going to be great. You've talked an awful lot about that lack of attack and that attacking shape. What about we win against England and then Sam Johnson gets dropped all the way to the bottom, goes back to Glasgow. Sione Tuipulotu comes in. Do you think that talks to the sort of the, perhaps like the tactical malaise that's in Scotland's attack at the moment?
The thing is, I wouldn't necessarily mind it if it was, you know, it was revealed after the fact that it was a horses for courses selection. And
yeah,
we win that game and Tuipulotu does a few things that maybe Sam Johnson can't do in terms of maybe a little bit more dynamic in the carry.
Yeah.
And you think, okay, well, there was a reason for that. You know, we won the game, but I didn't really see that happening. And then I felt, particularly against France, Tuipulotu can only really, I think, bring a power game, but he's not actually that powerful.
I think relative France, to Dante.
Well, sure. But then if that's the case, then maybe you pick someone who isn't going to try and run through the brick wall.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. I think that the selections in the back line at times were a bit, and I think the Kinghorn one, although there's maybe reasons behind that, I couldn't really understand the logic behind it.
Going a little bit too far forward, but do you think the centres is something we need to sort of fundamentally readdress in terms of that balance between attack and defence?
It's a difficult one, because I think that Harris does bring so much and has been so good for Scotland defensively, and I think when things are going well around him, he can focus on that and maybe running some hard straight lines, and that's all he really needs to do. But if Price, Russell, Hogg, we talked about before, aren't firing, as was the case in this tournament, then his limitations come to the fore. And I think it's almost the same with Johnson as well. Like, even though Finn, Johnson and Harris have played a lot of games together, the failure of them is that they can't bring, I don't think they bring much cutting edge, and they're not good at getting other players in the back line into the game.
Mm. Yeah. No, I agree. I think you're right. I think when you look at, especially, let's say, Finn, Hoggy, Doohan, Darcy Graham, they are attacking picks. Mm. And it's like, actually having Harris and even to a point Sam Johnson, there's a nice sort of balance between the two, as long as that axis of 10 and back three is firing. And when that didn't start firing, although to be fair, Darcy Graham had a great tournament.
Yeah.
Then maybe sort of Harris's limitations in that field just become a little bit more apparent, right?
Mm.
Yeah, and I think we can come on to talk about that sort of stuff when we look, I guess, look forward to the summer tour. What sort of tweaks could we appreciate there? Very dour opening sort of 25 minutes of the pod there.
Yeah.
Should we lighten the load a little bit? And if I ask you what was good, you know, either individually or...
Are we not doing my system?
Yeah, let's do the system.
Do you want to explain the system? I am the chairman of this podcast, and I don't really understand the system yet, so if you could talk me through it, it'd be great.
So we're going to split both players and general things into three buckets.
Okay.
And you've got sort of your top tier, which is the Daramorpho tier.
The Daramorpho god tier.
So as an example, Roy Darge falls into the Daramorpho
straight tier. Straight Morpho.
100%. We've then got the bottom tier, which is Matt Williams.
The Matt Williams. He's the bottom tier.
Bottom tier. Bloody cesspit.
Yeah.
You've had quite a bad tournament.
Just a slight side segue. He probably came into the tournament as maybe like the second most hated Scotland coach, with Scott Johnson bringing up the bottom. Scott Johnson's, you know, just by staying quiet, and Matt Williams.
Yeah.
He's now Scott Johnson's still in the relegation zone, but he's sort of moving up.
And a lot of players openly happy to pan him in public.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is always a bad sign. No one's really come out too hard on Scott Johnson. They know Scott Johnson's still powerful, though.
They know that somehow Scott Johnson's going to be the head of world rugby one day.
Yeah,
he's
going to
be pulling the strings. But anyway, sorry. So the middle tier, we've got Marfo at the top. We've got Matt Johnson at the bottom. What's the middle tier?
Yeah, and I think this is actually retrospectively a running joke between me and literally one other person. Is the Hugo Southwell left foot tier,
cultured left boot?
Okay,
which is it's good. But you're not raving about it, right?
It's like, the kind of kick where he'd hit a perfect spiral, but it would only go 25 meters.
Exactly.
I feel there's been times on this podcast that we've held up Hugo Southwell.
No, I think we have.
It's very high.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
For the purposes of this conversation,
yeah,
it's good, but you know, it's.
Yeah. I think you can put a lot in there. Andy Henderson short ball, Marcus Dorolo missed pass. There's a lot of it's just it's fine. All right. It's not world beating, but it's fine.
Yeah.
And I think, again, maybe Scotland's pack falls into that category.
Yeah. So should we start, since I opened this as a positive discussion?
Yeah.
Why don't we start with Rory Darge, you know, king of the Marfo lounge at Why Not at the moment. What is left to be said about Rory Darge in terms of his impact that he's had in the last 6 weeks?
I do think, actually, that game against France is super important, because I think the one thing about this season is he has managed to stand out and perform really well in URC matches, but was found a little bit wanting against La Rochelle.
Yeah, that's true.
In those big Champions Cup matches. And that's why even before that France pod, we were a bit worried about what he's going to be able to do. And obviously, we were completely wrong. And he stepped up.
It was the fact that it was Haining at six as well.
Yeah. He was really given response, because ultimately he was operating within a back row and a pack where he was by far the primary breakdown specialist. You know, no Watson. Yeah, yeah. You didn't have Fraser Brown at hooker, for example. There was a lot of people Haining, someone Bradbury, etc. They can obviously operate in the breakdown, but that's not where their strengths lie. And to have a lot of responsibility, and ultimately halfway through that first half, he got sort of two or three turnovers, and that really shifted the momentum of the game. We were sort of 12-0 down, and I think without him being on the pitch, you could have ended up in halftime sort of 26-28-0 down. And then whilst I don't think that form, he didn't stay at that level, he was 100% one of the better Scotland players on the pitch in that Ireland match.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you're right. And I think, is it too much to think that we're looking at the next 5 to 6 years of, once Watson sort of probably comes over the top off the back of the World Cup, Darge will take the 7 shirt, Richie's pretty much nailed in on that 6 shirt, and I guess Matt Ferguson's pretty solid in that 8 shirt until something new comes along, maybe a Muncaster or something along those lines. But this is a decade of Darge.
I mean, if he continues playing the same way he has,
Who else are you putting in the Marfo lounge?
Probably Pierre Schoeman.
Yeah, big time.
I think that even though he didn't start that first game against England, came in for the Wales game, and since then hasn't really looked back. And he's always been very good for Edinburgh, but you never quite know. And you know, he's absolute unit. Loves the physical side of things, is good in the scrum. But I think he probably exceeded expectations in his first Six Nations campaign.
Yeah.
He was really good. And I even thought against Ireland, I'd say Ireland would probably be he's the only Scottish player that might get in our pack. Like, I thought he was more effective than Kean Healy, for instance.
Yeah, yeah.
It's opposite. Wait, yeah, opposite other loose head. I mean, it is. I love seeing him play, and clearly, like, he loves playing Scotland so much, but it's slightly depressing that, like, our best player in the tournament, best forward, is from South Africa. If you, I mean.
I do get it. And there was something beautiful about that sort of, like, pick and go in the middle of the field.
Break. Yeah, yeah.
Do you think it was a try?
Yes. I think he just had the momentum. I
instinctively didn't think it was a try. And if it was the other way around, I didn't have the sound, and I couldn't actually hear sort of the TMO.
Yeah, neither could I.
But I instinctively thought it was going to be disallowed and sort of just was like, yeah, fine, great.
But he was great. And I think that loose head is a position, well, probably both prop positions depth-wise has been a bit of a worry.
Yeah.
But to have Sutherland and him hopefully staying fit, that's pretty great. The other person I put in,
and he's 27, which is sort of young in prop years.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, he had a great tournament. And the other person I put in, just sort of individual level, was Darcy Graham, who I think had his best Six Nations. He was absolutely class.
Yeah,
scoring returns against Italy, Wales, great finish, and then obviously he was a part of the penalty try against England as well,
and the first try.
And the first try.
Yeah. I think he beat the most in the Ireland game.
Yeah.
He beat most defenders in the game as well. Like, when Scotland were under the cosh.
Did he answer any questions that you had, perhaps, about him defensively or in the air?
Don't think he was particularly exposed. I think, as you said before, like, there is an argument for having a Maitland in there.
Yeah.
But I think it's almost to the point now where you maybe put Darcy slightly ahead of Doohan as your like nailed on winger.
Well, I think you come out the back of this with that back three, and almost Darcy and Doohan are on the team sheet ahead of Hogg.
They're nailed on. Well,
yeah.
And there's balance between the two of them.
Clearly.
Like, Doohan like looks like he's Darcy, but he's had like sort of experiments done to him, and he's just like sort of swollen and gotten enormous.
So I think it's it was good to see, because obviously he's been a little bit in and out over the last sort of 2 years.
Yeah.
Just sort of...
He's been the one that's been dropped rather than Doohan.
Yeah, 100%. So actually, I think it was nice to see. And I think in the world of, like, it's probably moving away a little bit from sort of massive players, but, you know, just his ability to be a man in a short space and how hard he hits the line. If Doohan could hit the line as hard as Darcy...
Or get involved as much
He'd literally murder people.
Yeah.
So
I'm trying to think beyond sort of individual players.
Night matches at Murrayfield.
What, you're saying we should have them?
As in, that's in the Darmorfo tier.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I think a night match, like a 5:15,
5 o'clock,
when it's dark, on a Saturday night at Murrayfield, the atmosphere, it's just banging.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the England game.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is the only one we have.
I also think just generally,
I think
there is something a little bit special about Murrayfield in darkness. And
what about doing the Wales thing and having a Friday night game at Murrayfield? I'd be quite up for that, I think.
I would be up for it, I guess, from an away standpoint. And also, if you've got kids and travel, I understand. For me, I would absolutely be fine with it.
I don't have kids, so...
And I would love it if
never taking Freya to the game ever again.
That is true. Freya will never be coming to, apart from Scotland Tonga in Nice, where I think I've actually bought her a seat. So
on her own, she's not going to be literally strapped to you.
Yeah.
I quite like the idea of it. I think
I do as well.
You know, you kick off at 8 o'clock or something. The stadium's so close to town.
I think you. Do,
I understand I the away side.
Yeah, I think you limit who can get to that to Edinburgh, Glasgow borders residents, but mainly you're going to get people from Edinburgh and Glasgow. I can hear Graham Love shouting at us from Aberdeen, being like, there's absolutely no way I can get that train down.
Yeah. But even from a fan standpoint, I like the Friday night match.
I think Friday nights are great.
Yeah.
So
I'd like to see them experiment with it.
I'd be interested.
Anything else in the Darmorfo tier? Post Six Nations, night outs and fingers.
Ben White's 10 minutes against England.
Ben White's 10 minutes against...
Yeah. It's like opening 5 minutes of international rugby where he scored that try. That is...
That is banging.
It's not like he's not got like the freedom of George Street, but he could certainly that weekend.
That night he could do
Dublin Street, maybe. It's just like a real like niche like offshoot in the new town.
Yeah.
It's got like two pubs in it.
Durham offered here for Ben White's profile in Scotland. Like he had no profile.
Yeah.
I didn't even know.
I have no idea.
You can see him
picking up like a low level sponsorship from like a good estate agent or something like that. Now they'd be wanting Ben White.
Rettys have been in this year already.
Presented by Coulters.
I'm trying to think if there's anyone else that you would chuck in there. I mean, I don't think it's. I think he's much more likely to be in the middle tier, whatever we're calling it. But I think Matt Fagerson is sort of. Kind of ended that conversation about the number 8 jersey for a little bit, but I think he's mid-table.
I think he's on the edge.
He's on the cusp.
Yeah. I think if he
Europa League.
Because he missed
sort of levels.
Yeah.
He missed Wales and France.
Yeah.
And I think if he'd had a full run, I think
he started the Wales game.
Did he start?
He came off.
Sorry, yeah.
But I think, is that maybe more of a he played well, but it's more of a reflection of Bradbury didn't manage to convert his sort of scintillating club form pre-tournament into anything at an international level, really.
And I think the whole debate that we were having pre-tournament about whether it was Bradbury or Fagerson starting, and I think we were probably... I was leaning probably a little bit towards Bradbury.
Yeah, I think everyone was.
Yeah.
And I wonder if we do get into the hype, though.
100%.
We're actually... It's not that we get into it. We start
like two options.
We start and drive it.
Yeah.
Don't miss out on your chance to see Glasgow Warriors at home at Scotstoun for the last time this season before the playoffs. Next Friday, they are hosting Zebra on Friday night at 7:35 kickoff. What better way to start your rugby weekend than getting down to Scotstoun and supporting Glasgow? Standing tickets from just £15 and then seats from £27 for adults and availability across the stadium. And it's going to be your last chance to watch some of the players that are moving on next season. And as I say, the last chance to see Glasgow at home before the playoffs. So get yourself some tickets and get down to Scotstoun next Friday night, the 1st of April, 7:35 kickoff, Glasgow versus Zebra. So let's go into the ambiguously named middle tier.
The Hugo Southwell left boot tier.
Hugo Southwell has a former appearance on this pod. I'm going to stand up for his left boot.
Yeah, he was
but
a nice
maybe
guy.
It is actually, you know, like that used to be the peak of Scottish rugby spiral kicks, and then Hogg's really taken it to the next level. So maybe that is, you know, maybe that's why it is in the mid tier.
Yeah, it would have been top tier back in the day.
Oh yeah, like
and then Darren Marfa came along as well. So.
Yeah,
God. Still the best Scotland debut ever. But anyway, we digress. We'll do our Darren Marfo documentary one day. right, mid-tier. We've sort of planted Matt Fagerson on the cusp. He's chatting to the bouncer. Yeah. He's trying to negotiate into the Darren Marfo VIP lounge. Who's very solidly at the sort of the Hugo Southwell VK bar in the main bit of Why Not?
I'm just thinking about how much money we'd make from a crowd fund to do the Darren Marfo documentary. Just us.
20 quid?
20 pounds from your mum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think Watson.
Hamish Watson?
Yeah. I think
solid, but... And improving, you could argue, throughout the tournament.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice to see him overtake Johnny Gray as, like, that tackle stat guy.
I do love that, but I also just, like, I wish Scotland weren't just there. You guys, you make those tackles, guys. You keep making them.
I'm also, like... What are the majority of those tackles like? Are they really close to the rock kind of grabs, or
what do you think your percentage would be?
What in my life? 60.
That's all right.
No, that's bad.
But anyway, so Hamish Watson,
yes,
obviously struggled a little bit. Would you say he struggled a bit with form?
I think
you got noised up by his brother on Twitter for suggesting his form was struggling a bit, didn't you?
I stand by what I said. I think it's from he was hitting such heights in the Lions tour. Unlucky to not get that Lions start, I think. And then, you know, maybe it's... There are a few people saying that maybe our Lions, who didn't overall play that well in the tournament, are struggling on the back of not having a break at all. And I've maybe got a bit of sympathy with that.
I do. I remember.
And I think Watson would fall into that camp.
I saw someone's like, well, they didn't even play very much in South Africa. I'm like, that's not really the point. It's sort of like the sort of just also mental
they
and physical. Played
quite a lot of the time as well.
Yeah, and just the mental and physical toll of what it was like an 8 week period of being in a bubble.
Oh,
and then
brutal.
They had sort of what looked like the two greatest weeks in Mykonos anyone's ever had with Finn Russell and Chris Harris, and then they're basically
Finn
back
goes,
to it.
Yeah, Finn goes back to France and is expected to play every second, whereas maybe in somewhere like Ireland, the players are, you know, rested a lot more.
But I feel like Watson came back quite quickly as well, thinking about the start of the Edinburgh season. So, no, I think there is probably something to it as well, and I think we'll sort of come back to it. And I think probably does feel like it's worth giving those players a rest as we move to the summer, especially because I think, whilst obviously Darge has played well, I still think when everyone's fit, you probably still go with Watson and Richie.
Darge off the bench. I agree.
And I think unless Darge, you know, starts to go even more stratospheric, that is what you're taking to the World Cup with Darge. Just too good to not have on the bench.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I'd put Watson in there. I think maybe a quiet start and then no bad games. They missed that game to COVID because he came back, I think, played really well against Ireland, actually.
I mean, I basically think everyone in the pack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shout for George Turner, knocking on the door of the VIP lounge.
Yeah. I think maybe if his arrow's been a little bit better against Wales.
Yeah.
He's sitting in the
talk about guys that carry hard into contact. George Turner. Horrific.
That guy's head is like
specifically against Ireland.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he just looks like a psychopath.
If he was like 10 kilograms bigger, you know, naturally.
Yeah.
He'd be like the best player in the world. He's an absolute brute.
I thought he had a brilliant... And I guess if we, in the same way in which Ferguson sort of put to bed the number 8 question, you would say that George Turner's the starting Scotland hooker at the moment, Matt?
I would start him, but I don't know if in Townsend's mind, he is the starting hooker.
Mm.
And I think you saw that across, you know,
it was still a bit chopping and changing. Yeah,
exactly. Changed the front rows around a wee bit. Brought in McAnally to start against France, I think.
Wales.
And Wales.
Swap, yeah.
And that's maybe a slight horses for courses. I don't know, but I feel like Turner just brings you actually quite a lot more than McAnally. And then Brown sort of comes back into things, but
I think Turner brings you more of what we need,
which
is that combativeness.
Abrasive. Yeah.
And I think previously they did, but I'm just not sure that Rambo and Fraser Brown bring enough of that other part of the game to counteract what Turner.
Is Turner slightly younger?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Couple years.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think he's at sort of like peak hooker age at the moment, and will be at that age going into the World Cup, whereas maybe McAnally and Brown are a wee bit.
You'd think it's going to be him.
With one of those two, I would say.
One of those two. Maybe an Ashman coming through as the third man on
the plane
for the World Cup.
Yeah, I like Ashman, actually.
I feel potentially just with another year with Fraser Brown, just a number of injuries and whatnot.
Yeah.
It feels like you probably end up with like a Turner, Rambo, Ashman.
But you see his value, certainly how Tooney values Brown, bringing him onto the bench for that Ireland game. He clearly offers that front row and back row option. He's great over the ball.
Yeah.
He's also a complete psycho in terms of like the physicality that he brings, but maybe he's just a little bit more injury prone.
Yeah, no, for sure. Feel like second row's still just a lot of questions around what the right combo is.
Feels like we've got an awful lot of very capable second rows, but we don't really have any absolute worldies. Like, we don't have a Maro Itoje, we don't have like a Willemser, we don't really have like a James Ryan that is like next level.
Yeah.
Whereas, and I think Johnny Gray, I don't know, he's obviously coming back from injury. He didn't really stand out when he came back against Ireland.
I thought he did pretty well.
Yeah.
But yeah, he does what you'd expect of him.
Like, yeah.
He's got a really good engine and will make a hell of a load of tackles, but just doesn't have that like bulk in the carry.
But the Cummings, Gray, Skinner when he can do a job, Gilchrist, like there's sort of four of them there that are kind of going to be there with then like the younger Bucks coming through with Hodgie. Maybe even Marshall Sykes.
Glenn Young.
Yeah. No, and I think you're right. I think all those four, you're absolutely happy for them to be in your starting Scotland team, but I don't think any of them are getting in anyone's Lions team.
No. And I think, like, they all had good tournaments, actually.
Yeah.
I think, well,
yeah.
obviously, Cummings didn't play, but...
Cummings had a good club game. Had good club games.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I thought, like, Skinner played really, really well. But
yeah.
As you say, he's not troubling that Ireland squad.
Big old boy Skinner.
Big old boy.
Yeah.
When he was in our particular VIP lounge on the train back Cardiff, yeah. he's a big guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where I can understand the ambiguity. It's like, can I do it on a train? Like, is that allowed?
I think there was nothing ambiguous with the way that Finn was getting stuck into the beers on the train back from Cardiff.
Caveat in the T's and C's that you can't enter the Thistle suite in carriage A.
Yeah, exactly.
I was thinking people that you could maybe add into it, like the blooding of some new players. Is that kind of like goodish? I think like Ben White showed enough in patches that he was pretty decent.
A broad sort of like tracker fund of young new people that we can put into the middle.
Yeah, like I thought it was nice to see Velikop feature. I'd like to see him a little bit more.
Had an extremely lively 3 minutes.
Yeah,
but it was like, it was embarrassingly small amount of time. I think it was Peter Wright on the BBC podcast was just like, what's the point of putting these guys on for such a little time?
Yeah. Which,
and it does speak to the fact that maybe Townsend just doesn't trust them enough.
I do also get it, though. I think he was, like, getting angry that, for example, Jamie Hodgson didn't get as much time against
France.
You're right,
getting angry.
And you're kind of like, Hodgson, I think, is a really good prospect, but he probably...
He's not there. He's not in that bracket of four yet.
Exactly.
No, yeah, totally. But yeah, like, Hodgson getting a bit of Six Nations experience, like, it's...
Do we think... I know we're sort of moving slightly out a little bit, given his maybe a pickup in form at the back end, that Price has sort of shifted into that middle tier. I thought against Italy, I know he had sort of some issues, but obviously open play was looking good. Start of the Ireland game, he had a lot of nice touches, and I actually thought his kicking was much more improved against Ireland. It was more the chase that was the issue.
Yeah, I think I remember back to the England game, I think Price's exits and kicking was very good.
Yeah.
Price was excellent in that game.
He was very, very good.
So I think he's had a sort of inconsistent, but I think he still sits in the Hugo lounge.
Yeah, he's in the Hugo.
Left-footed as well.
Exactly.
So it makes sense.
Nice circularity there. But let's move to the Matt Williams tier. It's what we really want to...
Does Matt Williams get in the Hugo Southwell lounge?
This is probably your most controversial thing, including the two that we can't broadcast.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate Matt Williams is clearly the worst. But there was that annoying thing where he was saying a lot of stuff in the Irish press, which actually, when you really sit down and watch it and think about it, was probably fair and then also kind of came to be true.
Yeah.
Now, still doesn't mean that his name shouldn't be on the door of the club.
Yeah.
But there is an argument to suggest that some of his commentary has pushed him, let him have a pop into the Hugo Southwell lounge.
I think he's so vain as well that if you said, look, Matt, we've got you this lounge, it's got your name on the door, and it was just full, like, really average, he'd be really happy with that.
Yeah.
So,
he is a complete prick, but unfortunately... And with
clicks.
A lot of those clips that were sent around, the Irish guys that were bagging Scotland, they were doing it from a position of like, I don't know, position of power is not right, but like they were saying things that were true.
From a position of authority.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah. And I guess, you know.
Guys like Rob Kearney, like, he was saying some really bad stuff about Scotland, but like he spent like 10 years of his career like beating Scotland
winning Grand Slams,
winning Six Nations,
just playing against Lights of Hog, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there is something specific about Ireland, both it feels like the players and the media, that they just do not respect Scotland.
Yeah. Ireland's my number two rivalry in the Six Nations, I think. If you've got to put England as number one, I hate Ireland second.
But the thing is, I don't think it's personal. Like,
no.
I think a lot of people were like, oh, they have it out for the Scots, but actually listening to Shane Horgan post the Ireland game,
he actually said
that Scotland performance was poor, the events leading up to it are like really amateur, but he was like, look, the Scotland team, it should be good, it's full of like loads of really good players.
Yeah.
And I actually think that even though Matt Williams backed Scotland the whole time, he would actually quite like to see Scotland doing okay.
Yeah. No, agreed.
He wouldn't have a career anymore. But
I think ultimately that Leinster and Munster, to a point, and Ireland have just created quite like a ruthless culture as well.
Mm, where
I just don't, I just don't think they accept that sort of mediocre performance.
Not winning stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, ultimately they have proven it over the last sort of 5 or 6 years enough to be able to probably take that position, especially against Scotland, where ultimately that game, like, it's just played out so many times before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that first half is just so classic Scotland-Ireland, or like the whole narrative of that game is just so classic Scotland-Ireland.
100%.
That Tom English probably could have written the article, had it saved, and just literally changed some names and published it.
Yeah. That would be great. Tom English just files on Friday night. Sets like a time for when it goes out, just past...
Do we think Tom English is almost gone? I feel like he's almost... you could sort of trace his articles just showed like that hope at the start. Post-England game, he really rode that wave.
Yeah.
And he's just... the Wales game, it was almost like he was generally like super depressed. Just like, but the Scotland team had been built up so much, and then by the end of it, he was just going to town
really
on the Scotland team.
He feels the disappointment that we all do, and he's like more eloquent than we are, just sort of like mashing the keyboard on Twitter.
100%. But the Matt Williams.
So Matt Williams is maybe he can be a basement dweller of the Hugo Southwell tier. The bouncer has turned a blind eye. Look, he's snuck in.
Yeah, he's
but he's still name on the door for the worst tier here.
Yeah.
Who's in there?
So I think the first name people we can put up for discussion is Hogg.
Yeah.
Now, before we start, and I just actually pulled this up before, I think the argument for Hogg, which I think is kind of an interesting one, is across the whole Six Nations, and this is according to the Six Nations stats, Hogg is top of metres made.
Sorry, the whole tournament.
Whole tournament.
Okay. Yeah.
He is over 150 metres ahead of anyone. So he's on 653, Monte Ioni's on 498, and Freddie Stewart's on 491. He's second for carries, whether you see that as a positive or negative is one. And he's in the top 10 for offloads with 6.
Hmm.
So from a stats standpoint, that looks like a really strong tournament.
That looks like him and Marfo Butler-Cavassier just like really kicking back at the top end.
But I think, and we were saying this, is it really felt like Hogg struggled across a lot of this tournament to really assert himself. Hmm. You know, you just compare it back to the England match from last year, where he was such an assertive presence and really just took that whole game by the scruff of the neck.
Yeah.
I think it's really difficult to categorize him. Like, I think you can make arguments for him anywhere. I think the thing with Hogg that I think has gotten to frustrate me, and I'm not going to say I'm representative of the fan base, I think is he is the spokesperson. He talks an awful lot about being their best and everything like that. And he makes loads of yards and he does things, but it just seems that every time there's a big moment, I think you can pretty much make it, and every time there's a big, really critical moment, he just does not deliver. And within this tournament, you've got the two big examples, Ireland and France, plus Night Out Gate.
And there was there not a kick in the Wales game at quite a key moment that he kicked out of the full?
Yeah, he kicked one out on the
full. He did that a couple of times.
Yeah.
And it just feels that, you know, like a player like Dan Biggar, who is not, perhaps he's not as skilled, he's not as natural an athlete as Hogg, can't do anything. I mean, then I'm comparing apples and oranges here, but those big game moments when you think about like the proper legends of the game that raise their countries to bigger than the sum of their parts, Hogg, particularly this year, just hasn't done that. And that's what I really struggle for. And I think that's probably good enough to get him into the Hugo Southwell lounge.
Yeah.
But I think the reaction, his personal reaction and not reading the room, having been Mr., you know, we want to be the best versions of ourselves. We've got so much pride in the jersey. I wanted to be captain. I want the responsibility. To then the sort of the childish thing to firstly go on the night out, getting confused by his own rules, and then to get annoyed when people were asking about it. And now it seems that he's gone down to Exeter. And look, Rob Baxter doesn't care about the SRU. He can say what he wants. He's protecting his player. But like, he seems that Hogg's gone down there. He doesn't seem to have learned anything. And that leaves me with a sour taste in my mouth. So that means he's getting, you know, a little rum and coke. in the Matt Williams suite.
But like with no ice. And no
ice.
No life.
In a plastic cup. In a plastic cup in the Matt Williams suite from me.
Or maybe it's just like a Meduri. That's all. It's Meduri. Just a little, like a warm Meduri. No ice.
So yeah, I've got so many mixed feelings about hardcore.
I have a lot of sympathy with that. And I think he played very well in the England game. I don't think he didn't make any of those kind of mistakes. He did the basics very, very well.
Yeah.
And I think he actually did the same in parts of the Ireland game.
Yeah.
Where he, at various moments, he was probably our best player. I think in terms of those stats of him having like the most carries, I think some of that is good play. Some of that is the fact that he's just a fullback who always carries, carries back.
Yeah.
And I think that once again speaks to whether either him or a fullback should be, or the kind of player he is, should be your captain. That in those moments he wants to assert himself, so he's probably going to run everything back as much as possible. You know, I think we talked about this before on the back of like high profile mistakes. And I think maybe out with this tournament, like he's probably contributed more positively to big wins and big moments than those negatives.
Yeah.
But as you said, like combined with, I think, how he's behaved as a captain, I don't know. I think it's quite interesting how I think quite a lot of people have now turned on someone who was an icon and like was being talked about as, is he our best ever player?
Too big now.
To their legacy being quite, well, at threat of being tarnished.
I don't think it's at threat of being tarnished. I think there's been two big narrative shifts is Hoggy, you know, first name on the team sheet? Is he invaluable to this team? I think people are questioning that. I think people are beginning to actually come around to the idea that Finn Russell might actually just be unfit. Like people, there's definitely being more questions asked about why has Finn got a quite bad rig for a professional athlete. But anyway, that's sort of by the by.
Well, we might talk about that. Whether he's in the sat next to him in the lounge.
Holy cows, there's a couple that have been slotted this Six Nations.
I think the Hog narrative can shift quite quickly, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I think whether he would... don't know whether he would agree with this. I think it would be better for him and the team and just everyone in general for him to relinquish the captaincy and just focus on being the best fullback he can be and just being a leader in that
100%.
Squad. Now, that's a really hard thing to do, right? Especially when you've like proactively gone after that role. But it feels even actually more so, back to the points we were making earlier, it feels really important for Scotland, given where our weaknesses are, to have a forward leader a little bit. And I think ultimately, if there wasn't a clear candidate, then you don't do it. But I do think Jamie Ritchie probably is becoming that clear candidate. And you've got the summer tour, which is an opportunity to, you've got the narrative, oh, we're going to rest the Lions players because they've, you know, had so much time. We're going to make Ritchie the captain. We go to Argentina. Come back in the autumn. You're like, oh, Ritchie did so well. Hogg, you know, is going to still be a senior player. Yeah. We're going to carry on with Ritchie as captain.
Yeah.
And you can kind of sort of play that story out. Now, obviously, there's a different question about how Ritchie deals with what is, I'm sure, a very powerful selection of very powerful players in that back line. And
the big dogs.
Supposedly,
self-proclaimed big dogs.
Supposedly call themselves the big dogs.
I mean, do you not understand irony, guys? Or like, do you not thought of a better name? Like, even a funnier name or something? Probably not.
But no. I mean, best case scenario is, I think Hogg just, you know, keep his head down and bashes out some big performances for Exeter.
Yeah.
The question is, if it got to the point where you're like, right, he is, maybe we'll get onto this, but he is a bad influence, or, you know, we want to send out a message, who else would you play? I don't think that this is maybe the problem with Scottish rugby, that like,
I don't think
it is shallow in some ways, and I don't know who you would.
I mean, it would have to be Kinghorn, right?
I mean, after Kinghorn, it's Ollie Smith, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
Byron McGuigan. Yeah, I know.
No.
Sean Maitland. People that have played 15 for Scotland in the last, like, 10 years. Yeah. Stuart Hogg plus some also-rans.
Yeah.
Hugh Jones?
Hugh Jones, but again...
Who played fullback when Hogg played 10 against Italy?
I think it was Maitland.
Okay.
But to your point, I think it's ultimately, over the last 10 years, Hogg has been an extremely positive force on this team. And I think, to your point, it's clearly been a bit of a bad tournament, both in certain respects on the pitch, and I think especially at the back end. I do think when you look back at that press conference and some the demeanour and some of the comments, it looks quite bad. But I think ultimately there is a way that you can just sort of like almost forget what's happened and sort of just 100%. Take it forward.
Oh yeah, I think there's a very easy way out of it. And actually I have sympathy for him, you know, like, because he will be self-aware. He will know that he's probably butchered that chance. He will know that he's been on the piss on the Saturday night before. You know, he knows how the media works. He's not an idiot in that sense. So, you know, to go out and do that, I just think he could have been handled. Maybe he was badly advised. I don't know. But, like, his attitude just didn't come. He just did not hit the right marks in that press conference.
Yeah.
Who else is joining him in the lounge? Finn?
In the bad lounge.
I think Finn, in some ways, his tournament has been very similar to Hogg's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just think, like, for Scotland to do well, Finn needs to be playing, like, an 8 or a 9 out of 10 every game. And maybe that's, like, quite a lot of responsibility on his shoulders, but that's just the reality, right?
Well, I guess look at it.
He's one of the best paid players in the world. He's meant to be world class. And I'm like, well, fine, that's your role, that's your job. And I don't think he was that in this tournament.
Yeah. Good on the good side of the ledger, last 20 minutes against England, where he sort of took it by the scruff of the neck.
Some of the first half against Wales.
Yeah.
I thought there were some moments against France.
So did I. I thought phase play. Passing well was good.
Yeah, I think it was almost moments in France where his passing was the best it's been the whole tournament. Yeah.
Countered by that jogging around period.
Yeah. I was less bothered about that.
Jogging around. His discipline. It was another
second half against Wales.
Another 10 minutes in the bin.
That was a complete fall off. Yeah. And, like, you know, he kind of got away with it in the last Six Nations when he got binned and then red carded. Like,
that was what was frustrating, particularly in the Wales game, having seen him that sort of switch flick in the last 20 minutes against England when he sort of took it by the scruff of the neck, put us in the right areas, got the result. You know, we were sort of floundering against Wales, and maybe it's not fair to lay it at his feet, but, like, he didn't raise his game to sort of help raise the team. And that's, as you say, that's what we need from a player like him.
That's the thing. And I think, you know, it comes back to that sacred cow you were talking about being slaughtered. Like, if he was in really, you know, in from the outside, like, really good shape and had behaved, hadn't gone out in this night out, etc., then I think that could... it would be a different conversation.
Yeah.
But taking all those things together, I just think you do, this leads to this, like, quite big question of what does he want from his international career, at least? Like, does he want to be known as, you know, he could be in the conversation of Scotland's best ever player, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think. Sure.
But I don't know if at times if he's like, and people say that he's this utmost professional. And I think there's question marks around whether that is actually the case.
Well, the two biggest sort of discipline breaches of Scottish rugby in the last 5 years have both involved him, and one of them was about him specifically.
Well, I guess if we sort of merge it together a little bit, our sort of tripod of drinking in the bleak watering hole of the Matt Williams Lounge, could it be Hogg, Finn and Tunney?
I think in terms of, like, if we measure the entrance for that, like, what you got to show to the bouncer to get in is, like, what was your reputation going into the tournament and what was your reputation leaving the tournament? You know, those, like, political tracker polls that they do. Like,
I think
all of them are definitely in the negative column.
Yeah.
The thing I just keep going back to is, who do Scotland need more to get through the group stages? I'm just talking about the group stages of the World Cup. And I think the answer might be Finn versus Tunney.
Oh, versus Tunney.
Versus Tunney.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
Finn and Warren Gatland.
Finn Warren-Gatland.
I'd actually love it if we got Warren Gatland on like an 18-month contract just to the end of the World Cup.
But it's difficult. I'm not convinced, and I don't think any of us convinced by Blair Kinghorn. Hastings is good, but even for Gloucester in the matches I've watched, I don't know if he's performing at a level or has performed for Scotland. And clearly, Tooney doesn't trust him, right, to have that 10 jersey. The reason Kinghorn's playing, right, when Hastings is fit. And to the point earlier about the fact that in the next 18 months, we're not going to have a four-pack that's as good as South Africa or Ireland.
Yeah.
So our backs are going to have to be absolutely firing.
Mm.
And I just don't know if we can do that without Finn. So, and I think Townsend knows that as well. That's why he's been super pragmatic. Yeah, yeah. And I think you could add a little bit Price and Hogg into that.
Yeah.
I think without Price, Finn and Hogg firing, Scotland have a very low chance of getting through the group stages.
Yeah, 100%.
So you end up in the position where, and whether it's true, you know, if it came down to one or the other, should Dodson make the tough call? He earns 900 grand. Love he's it. Paid to this earn the tough call.
This is why he's paid.
That whilst obviously it's not a good thing to do, given the sort of, obviously the players doing the breach, etc., but is it the best thing for Scotland going through to that World Cup to get rid of Townsend? If you know, the signs are there. We don't know everything, but the signs are there that there is not a great relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Alan coming out for Tooney.
I know.
I'm not coming
out. Very interesting.
No, I think it's a really important question. And, you know, there are these, like, murmurings that the camp is, like, a toxic place. You've seen that word landed out about opponents. Yeah. That, like, maybe this events of last weekend is a rebellion. It's like a breaking point of, I don't know, they're being treated like children or they're unhappy with how things are being run. I don't know. I think combined with, it seems Townsend's like reign has been very up and down.
You know, yeah.
Like 2019 World Cup, absolute disaster. Then things get a little bit better, but then the Finn stuff
felt like we were on the
And then you sort of go down again. I think this tournament, when the performances have been poor and you've had the discipline issues, and also I think the selection has been quite strange, none more so than the Blair Kinghorn one, you kind of think that maybe something's not quite right with Townsend. And I actually do agree that, like, are you going to get out of that group stage with Hastings or Kinghorn or Ross Thompson?
Yeah.
How important do you think at a corporate level the SRUC getting out of the group stage at the World Cup?
Well, I guess it's a different. I think Dodson's done. He's been there for. He's going to be there for 12 years when you get to World Cup. I think that's his contract.
Him and Townsend's contracts are sort of like they're interlinked. Like,
Dodson's not getting another contract. It's not 100% not happening.
100%.
So
I don't believe Townsend will unless something else. Something massive changes.
So for someone like Dodson, it's an interesting situation. He's not needing a good Scotland performance because he's not going to be staying on. I think maybe if he was like 2 years in, he'd be like, shit, if Scotland, you know, let's say worst case scenario, they lose to South Africa, Ireland and Tonga, which is a very real possibility.
And Spain.
Then I think
Israel Folau's just committed to Tonga for the
World Cup. I saw that.
Leave us alone.
I think it generally seems, again, that Dodson is very Team Tooney. And I think...
I think they're linked, because he was the one who made the big strategic call. Tooney over Vern. They're Harry Potter and Voldemort. They're connected.
But at the same time, I think...
I don't know which one's which.
Which one's which.
Dodson's got to be.
Yeah,
Dodson's Voldy.
Yeah, Dodson's not Harry Potter.
That's very true. I'm not going to cast Tooney straight away as a Harry Potter-esque character, but it's a flawed metaphor.
But then at the same time, I don't think it's a good message, right, to sack Tooney after what's happened. I think it looks really bad publicly. After,
as in the players can just do what they want.
Players have broken protocols.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're firing the coach. It just looks bad. But again, he's paid the big bucks to make those decisions,
to make
right?
Big calls.
And ultimately, I think potentially the best case scenario for everyone is for Tooney to walk.
Mm.
But again, I don't know. That's He shouldn't have to do that as well, right?
But or if, make that call. I guess if he feels that he's lost the room.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying that, you know, I'm sure Tooney's well remunerated. He'll want to go to a World Cup. He'll want to right the wrongs of 2019.
Yeah. The follow-up to that is, what coach has taken that gig?
I was just going to ask
that's,
that.
That's part B of that question, isn't it? It's like, well, who's actually going to come in with 18 months to go? Scotland in a low ebb. Who fancies that gig?
Is this the ultimate Matt Williams redemption story?
Joint ticket. Matt Williams and Scott Johnson come back.
The players would be out every single weekend. It would be funny. It would be like the banter era of Scottish rugby.
We are living in the simulation banter era.
So. If you're a coach and you look at that and you're like, team looks a little bit broken.
Yeah.
They've got South Africa and Ireland plus a Tonga with a Luamapi, Falau, etc. I just don't know if that gig's helping me. Maybe if you get like a 5-6 year contract, but
you'd want to take it after the World Cup, right?
You want
bad World Cup, pick up the pieces,
100%.
And I think like people are like, oh, get Scott Robertson in. I'm like, he has expressed no interest. Not even like everyone's like, oh, I literally think it's because his name is Scott Robertson. People are like, he'd love to coach Scotland. I think he's aiming high. I think he'd aim for like the England job, for instance.
100%.
Which would be, I think, for him, a lot more attractive. And beyond that, I honestly don't really know who you're getting. You take a punt on a super rugby coach. That's risky.
Yeah.
Like Wayne Pivak's been very up and down for Wales.
And like, then you look at the in-house options. Mike Blair's not ready.
Mike Blair is, I think, Scotland coach from probably 2027. Well, yeah. I think that's his setup. If he can take Edinburgh over the next 5 years, win the URC, compete in Europe, I think he is your default option, potentially. Mm.
So what you're saying is bring back Dan McFarlane from Ulster.
Again, why would Dan McFarlane take it? I think he's the number one choice for 2023.
Yeah.
If he can get a big trophy with Ulster.
For Ireland.
For Scotland.
Oh, McFarlane.
Or Ireland.
I guess he'll be in the discussion for Ireland as well.
I think he'd rather have the Ireland job.
If he gets a big trophy with Ulster between now and 2023, I think he's front runner for both Scotland and Ireland.
Yeah, that's a good
if
point.
That job comes up. Mm. So again, why would you take it? I think Vern Cotter is the only legitimate option.
The Vern Cotter,
I just don't know if he leaves Fiji.
He could do a year and a half.
Really
Cotter, intense, no
Warren
nonsense.
Gatland could do the 18 months.
Vern Cotter with Laidlaw's skills coach.
Oh my word.
Avengers assembled.
That'd be the worst camp ever.
It would go down so well with like the Scottish Rugby Forum on Facebook. I think we'd like love that.
Yeah. I mean, I think like the general fandom would be like, because there's always that feeling that Vern is like unfinished business.
It was also...
And Greig's so popular, quite rightly, for everything he did in the Scotland show.
I think you talk about keeping a happy camp. Somehow that Vern Laidlaw, clearly there's a few players that weren't, you know, there's been public stuff, but they seem to keep a happy camp. And a lot of players talk very positively about those Vern years.
Basically everyone apart from Jim Hamilton has spoken really positively about Vern Carter.
I think the other point is that we've talked about before, Laidlaw and Russell have an extremely good relationship.
Yeah.
And that Laidlaw might be able to bring Russell in line.
So maybe Laidlaw
and Hogg have, a good relationship.
So maybe Laidlaw finishes up in Japan this year and then is brought back into the SRU fold as a auxiliary coach for Hype Man.
Yeah.
he's just fat Joe.
Super patriotic.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh yeah, this guy means business.
You bring him in to just be around.
Yeah.
Lift the standards. I don't know.
Yeah,
the standards are lacking at
that
moment.
Group will still respect him, and as you say, he does have core relationships, and the SRU love getting people back on the payroll.
Oh yeah,
like look at anyone with like a semi-Scottish rugby profile over the last 10 years; they're all on the SRU payroll, apart from us.
But actually, that's true. We're still waiting for that payroll.
What are we doing wrong, guys?
I know. We toe the party line.
Yeah,
we're pro
time.
SRU.
But then I think. Just circling back.
Yeah, let's touch base on that.
Dodson, I don't think needs to do it. I don't think Tooney will want to do it. I think it looks terrible from the outside. And I don't know whether you want to set that precedent of player power.
Yeah.
So I just don't think it happens.
I think Dodson's looking... The smart play for Dodson is internal review. Try and keep it as quiet as possible.
Yeah.
I reckon some number two heads go. Whether it's like a skills coach
that happened
or
after
some...
the 2019 World Cup.
Yeah.
Matt Taylor.
Like, Tunney will stay. I don't think Tandy will go. I think Tandy's probably got a big enough brand that he survives, but...
Just get rid of John DL.
John DL?
Be in the role for like a year. Like, get lost.
John DL, but like maybe they're just like, he's not good enough.
I can never pronounce his name, but is it...
Peter Zonda.
He's only been there for 6 months, so hasn't he?
Exactly.
Look, if you've got to do the review, you've got to show change. So then you change your captain. So there's a new thing coming through, and then I would sacrifice a couple of coaches.
But there's no coaches you can get rid of. You got John DL.
Coach can.
Steve John. Tandy, AB. Like, there's no...
Look at the roles that they create within the SRU for people. Like, who's it? What, the MD for Glasgow is now, what, like, head of international NFTs
projects.
Or something like that?
Projects.
What is that?
Special project.
Of course, John DL will
for
be
the
what,
old
like,
glory DC NFT drop. Yeah. It's going to be so good.
Like, John DL becomes like head of the Super Six.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, right. The SRU, they can move people around and keep everyone happy or relatively happy.
Yeah.
Do you think there's room for, and within that, presumably, there'd have to be a complete reset of relationships between Townsend, Hogg, Russell?
Look, all three of them. They need to do like a sort of pact. It's like, look, all three of our reputations are intricately linked to the 2023 World Cup.
Yeah.
We need to fucking man the fuck up and sort out any shit that we've got between us.
Don't look past the end of that.
Just that, but that's it. But that's the thing. Like, Hogg and Finn will both be up and over 30.
Yeah.
Tunney will be coming to the end of his contract with Scotland. Like, this is it.
Mm.
Their last World Cups. I mean, Tunney might come back in some sort of other guise for another nation, but like, for Hogg and Finn, this is their last go. There needs to be a sort of a clear the air session and then a real, like, come on, we've got 18 months to inspire this group, this country, whatever it is, and then go.
If only there was some sort of lounge where they could sort of discuss these things over a,
like,
you know,
a
warm cocktail.
Why not?
Yeah, a couple of heavies at the front. No one else allowed in.
No one's allowed in.
They've got to go... Yeah, choose your weapon at the VK. Choose your weapon at the VK bar.
Could be that bit at the back, the VK bar. Yeah, yeah. They could close that off.
Yeah,
but you're right. Like, their reputations and their, you know, legend status within Scotland is all linked together. The two greatest players and two greatest backs of the professional era in Scottish rugby,
and the third from just before the professional era. Do you know what I mean? But Tooney's legacy as Scotland coach could be, in 18 months' time, two group exits at the World Cup, three-fourths in the third in the Six Nations.
Yeah.
And it's great. The pie has gotten bigger, broadly because of what the SRU's doing with its international recruitment strategies rather than anything.
I think it was international, like, all glory. I was like,
no,
what are you
not
talking?
That. But, like, I mean, the player pool's got better. Yeah. It's got deeper. But... Tooney could be staring down the barrel of a really bad,
and he could
be better, but do you know what I mean?
No, like, I completely agree. And he could, at the end of his reign, have on his record book two World Cup group exits, but also the highest winning rate as a professional coach.
Yeah.
Which I could actually see him probably still having, because he's still got that.
Yeah.
But that would, who would care, right?
Exactly.
If you've gone out of two World Cups, I appreciate it's more difficult than World Cup pools.
I think if he'd had two exits in the groups, you look at this group coming up, is there actually disgrace for Scotland going out to Ireland and South Africa, who are two of the top three teams in the world at the moment?
No.
But if he had made markable progress with either, not necessarily a Six Nations Championship, but like a close second, or like a, you know, still being in the tournament after 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, actual competitive progress as a group of, you know, Scottish rugby fans would have been like, you know what? That was a bad draw.
Yeah.
It was the worst possible draw we could have got, and that's what it is. But...
So I guess, and I probably...
I think we should be brought in, is what I'm saying, is that we should mediate these conversations. Yeah, yeah.
We should mediate, so like, a Tooney, Finn, Hogg, like, weekend session at, like, the Trump Turnberry. just like hot tubs, beers, a couple of golf games, get it all sorted. But so let's start. I don't know, we're sort of taking a long time.
We're an hour
and
20 in here. This is
but
our dinner reservation's in 20 minutes.
Let's start from the assumption that you need Finn and Hogg to get through those group stages.
Yeah.
And Tooney's going to be the coach. Mm-hmm. It's like, fundamentally, what do we need to do between now and, let's say, Autumn Internationals? Do you think you just let it settle?
So this on this relationship point.
Yeah. I think
maybe
is Richie as captain, does that help?
I was just going to say, that could help.
I don't know. Because I guess we don't know how those three personally interact.
Yeah, it's an interesting
Is Jamie
one.
Ritchie going to be able to get the best out of Finn? Maybe that's not Richie's job. Maybe that's still got to sit with Townsend because Finn is Finn.
Yeah, yeah.
But...
And I suppose Townsend as well has obviously... I think we've talked about it before, that clearly the issues that were raised when Finn first left camp were never sorted out, despite their...
They just made a pact.
Yeah, they made a pact.
In which case, they just need to make another one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but let's not forget...
But then I think also, like, the fact that Townsend is clearly, like, eating a big slice of humble pie and said to Finn, here's vice captaincy, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Finn has still fucked around. Like, what do you do next? Take it away from him? Take it away from Hogg?
Yeah.
Pissed him off more?
There's no carrot. He's given him carrot and stick.
Yeah.
And he's still not incentivized.
You got to remember, Townsend and Hoggy haven't had a rosy relationship the whole time. No. The whole sort of 2014 dropping Hoggy for the, I think it was the Pro 14 semi-final, Pro 12 semi-final at the time. They've had clashes in the past.
It just shows.
2014 Townsend would be annoyed at 2022 Townsend. Be like, just fucking drop them.
I know.
He's like, wait, that guy playing for Falkirk is the 10. What the hell are you talking about?
I just don't quite get that with like the Hogg and Tooney kind of issues, considering I see them as very similar.
Yeah.
People. Yeah.
But then maybe that's, I'm lumping all the borders people into one thing.
I don't know.
Gala against Hoik. That's like,
maybe that does.
You know.
Blood runs. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Just because we do have dinner, a couple of other ones to throw in.
Yeah.
Really endearing ourselves to the listenership.
Look, Scotland Defence.
Got a crack on.
Put in. We've got it discussed a little bit, I think.
Are we still in the Matt Williams lounge?
Yeah, we're in the Matt Williams lounge. I'm putting the defence in the Matt Williams lounge.
Yeah,
because of how far it's dropped.
So are you putting Steve Tandy in? Or is it this amorphous?
Amorphous. I'm putting the amorphous Scottish defence
system and execution.
I think it's more than double the amount of points conceded versus 2020.
Yeah.
And then I think the first time we've gone to triple figures for a while across the whole tournament.
Three tries conceding against Italy, who like couldn't play rugby prior to that point.
Yeah. And I think some of it's contextual. Like ultimately, that France match, the number of tries we conceded was a little bit due to how they had to play. But at the same time, against Wales, I think there was moments of softness against Ireland. Ultimately, Ireland left points out there.
Oh, yeah. I'm only in third gear.
Big time.
Yeah, and I think that's the saddest thing about it is their attack definitely wasn't firing.
And Wales have been revealed as a really quite rubbish team.
Yeah, exactly. So England. So that England match, again, is the one sort of high point where the defence was really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they did a lot of defending in that match.
Huge
That whole win was fully based on just 60 minutes of being able to hold the line.
Scotland defence is in there.
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is. I think Tandy's too big to fail.
Yes, for sure. And I think
he's got credit in the bank as well.
Yeah, and rightly so.
Yeah.
But I think that's, if not number one on the agenda, if your summer tour agenda is, or the going forward agenda is, we need to sort out this leadership issue, which is kind of what we've been talking about for the last 10 minutes. That's number one. Defense, surely number two. Getting that back to a stage where, you know, you want to be limiting Argentina across these three tests. You want to see seriously marked improvement.
Do you think, when you think about that group stages of South Africa and Ireland, is defense a bigger priority than attack right now? I appreciate they're both incredibly important, right?
But
it's. I think it is, because
I think
that sets the phone. We've got to at least, we've got to, in some way, stop it.
parity.
I guess, in both of those games, big, powerful packs, you've got to get parity up front, and you've got to stop them running up a scoreboard where we are chasing the game, because then you have to sort of sacrifice one to chase the other.
Yeah.
So from word go, you need to be defending really, really well.
Yeah.
And then you've got to hope that you stifle them, they start chasing it a bit, and then gaps appear.
Yeah.
So yes, I would say defense is more important than attack, probably.
I also think that defense is more easily solvable than the attack.
Well, I guess particularly the fact that in very recent memory we've had a very good defense.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think all those players can and want to tackle. And a defensive system, I think, is easier to implement than an attacking style and approach.
I guess, so then thinking about that, and very briefly, what players do we think it's important to get game time this summer?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good question.
Well, that's, I guess, to rephrase it, is sort of like, what changes would you make to the team that ended the Six Nations to maybe one that you want to be seeing in the World Cup, and how do you get there?
Redpath.
Honestly, we've joked about it a couple of times and it's becoming reality. I just think Redpath is going to be one of those players.
Is he our Tuolagi?
Tuolagi.
We just got to you got to have another option. Great if he's there, but...
He's had too many, big injuries, too many rebuilds of his, key limbs.
Who could fulfill a similar role that could be in that?
Blair Kinghorn
at 12. So what we're basically saying is we want a creative playmaker at 12, right?
I think Rory Hutchinson, but his defence, I still think...
Too suspect.
It's just too suspect.
Yeah. I think James Lang isn't there.
He's not in the same calibre.
I really
a bit more of a blunt instrument.
I really it's probably a bit too early, but Matt Curry from Edinburgh.
Yeah, he's a really
good
player.
He'd be that kind of player. I think it's too early.
He's next generation.
He probably is.
Interesting. If you go back to 3 years ago, I think everything was saying, you'd think Stafford McDowell would be the perfect option
really
at 12.
Show.
He played well at the weekend.
And he did play well.
And did all those things that you're like, right, he's pretty big.
Yeah.
But he's got really good skills and he can boot it.
Yeah.
Loving the McDowell at 12 campaign.
I don't know.
If he could get a run going, it'd be interesting. But
interesting to see how he coped in the Six Nations, maybe.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of players you need to have, I think you need to have Schoeman.
Yeah.
I think you need to have a pre-Lions Xander Fagerson.
Xander Fagerson's going to have about 75 caps by the time he gets to the World Cup.
Yeah.
I think he's so durable
as well.
If he plays to his highest level, then I think he can...
And you would hope
he can mix it with those guys.
You'd hope a little bit of age sort of softens the edges on his penalty count and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Cummings.
Cummings
and Gray, but then maybe someone like, I don't know, like a Glenn Young comes in. Glenn Young is absolutely massive.
Glenn Young.
I know it's early, but.
Culturally, he just looks like the antithesis of Gray as well, because he's got tattoos and shit and a shaved head, and they're great, soft and cuddly.
Yeah.
Whereas Glenn Young's just evil.
I think the back row kind of picks itself.
What do you think about Cummings and Skinner? Have they got the potential to just step up that little bit more, maybe versus Johnny Gray and Gilchrist?
Potentially. I can kind of see Skinner as he's going to end up a bench option.
He falls in that category of just too versatile.
Always
did
a good
bench.
Job, but maybe doesn't have that
maybe not
punch.
Quite big enough.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think Cummings has got to be a starter if he comes back to that form.
Yes.
I think in the back line, you've got to have Price, Russell, Hogg, Doohan, Graham.
Probably.
All firing to have a chance.
So the midfield is a big question mark. And it asks big tactical questions, because if you take Harris out of that, you need to either find a defensive leader of his caliber, or you're sort of slightly changing the balance of that midfield.
I think the days of a Hugh Jones at 13 are probably gone.
Do you think it's more likely that Bennett is the one who potentially could take over from Harris?
Yeah, I get that sense.
Yeah. No, I agree. Dingwall.
I think it kind of
Dingwall.
Dingwall. Well,
Dingwall.
Finn Smith. Hutchison. Fraser Dingwall.
Dingwall's good.
Dingwall is good. And
he's consistently good.
Surely
in the
there's got to come a time when he's I'm not going to get picked for England.
Yeah.
He's not. He doesn't, well, doesn't trouble a squad.
Which, and if I want to go to a World Cup.
Which is no.
Come on home.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think Finn Smith's doing anything pre this World Cup. He's just going
to... I also don't think he's that good, personally.
All right.
All right.
Well, we've got a lot of social media hype.
He's like 20 and starting for a Premiership team.
Yeah.
But I do...
But I think ultimately this conversation reveals that, like, there's not that much choice. We basically need all the players who are still in the current squad to be playing really well.
It's kind of interesting that the next cabs off the rank are probably just not there yet. And that might change in 18 months. You never know. But it's not like there's a real second layer that are properly busting through. They're just...
I mean, that's a perennial problem in Scottish rugby, right?
But of course. And it's always going to be a problem.
But I do think...
I'm going to order an Uber, by the way. So...
Okay, right.
All right, so that's really setting the timer on the end of this podcast. I think that's absolutely fine.
It's only 10 minutes away, so...
That's fine. I'm looking at my extremely extensive notes. Hog out, ? Covered. Toonie out, ? Covered. Summer tour squad?
Kind of covered.
We've kind of covered that. And then I had
I think
brackets.
In the summer tour squad, you could take like a Matt Curry.
Well, maybe that's...
Or you could give Vellacott or White starts.
It does sound like they're going to be doing a match against Chile.
Chile. Which is an absolute...
So we could get caps.
As an absolute free-for-all for... It's a little bit of a come get... It's like a reverse come get me plea for like people with Scottish grannies that are looking to get in the mix for a Rugby World Cup.
That Henry Arundel guy. The England under 20s.
Again, he's just like, I've got to at least wait out one cycle.
I would like him to be very badly advised, because at the moment, the bad advice is to take Scotland.
Yeah.
Because he's absolutely carved
like,
up.
Do you want an international cap now or in 5 years' time?
Yeah. But look, bird in the hand's worth two in the bush. Look, you've got to take it, Henry, if you're listening. Look.
Yeah.
I'll invest that money for you. In 5 years' time, it'll
is
be
Henry
fine.
Arundel the heir to Hog?
Question. It's not the idea of Henry Arundel full power for Scotland. People will be like, well, who is
I think
this
he's got
chunk?
A Scottish mum, though.
Yeah, no,
like,
he
I think
does,
he is
does.
Like properly 50-50 rather than...
It's going to be 10 years' time. It's going to be Ollie Arundel captain with Ollie Leather Barrow vice
leather,
captain.
The Leather Barrows, yeah.
And like, Muncaster at 8. Yeah. We'll have some good names.
Jed Gelderblum.
Gelderblum, yeah.
I love Jed Gelderblum. Yeah. Such a
Get
good name.
Get him in.
Yeah.
It's all we've got. We've just got like funny stuff as our fallback.
We are, I mean, unfortunately, this is our lot in the rugby life. We are a banter nation. Like, we're right on the cusp of being good, but we're always going to be plagued by this.
It's true.
We're like Arsenal.
I think this Six Nations club. I think this Six Nations, we have come off as a laughing stock. No, I actually think we have.
We need to get some food in you.
Yeah, I think we have. Like, I think it's all the sort of like pre-held views of like Ireland has come true. Like, we're a bit soft, and then we're like not professional.
Our Irish troll has felt so bad for us. She stopped trolling us.
She hasn't even tried to set up another profile.
It's true. After three profiles of
trolling.
I was
thinking about that the other day, actually.
Well, if you're out there, Madge, come back. We miss you.
Yeah, it made life interesting, at least.
Right, I think we are probably reaching the end of our sort of our time on the pod today. It's an hour and 35 minutes. I generally think we probably could have done 3 hours sort of picking over the carcass.
I think it's probably our longest pod ever, actually.
I think it might be.
Could well be.
So for the handful of you that have stayed throughout, thank you very much for staying with us. We will be back. Will we be back next week? Yes, we will.
Yeah.
Obviously ahead of big weekends in the URC. I think Glasgow Zebra. The last Glasgow home game of the season, actually, until the playoffs, if they get into the playoffs, of course. So plenty to look forward to there. But keep in touch with us on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod, on Instagram, Thistle_Rugby_Pod, and sign up to the newsletter. That'll be going out Monday morning on Substack, Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. But we will be back. Cheers. Bye.
See ya.
See ya.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.